England to Poland, every step across the ocean. The ruling classes, them is in a mess. Oh yes, the capitalist system a regress. But the Soviet system now progress. So which one of them you think is best? When are the two of them the workers a contest? When crisis is the order of the day. When so much people crying out for change nowadays. So what about the working class, comrade chairman? What about the working class? They bear the cross, they carry the cross. And them not go forget them tongues in Gadangs. Them not go forget them tongues. From the east to the west, to the land I love the best. The ruling classes, them is in a mess. Oh yes, crisis is the order of the day. The workers, them demanding more pay every day. The peasants want a lot more say nowadays. The youth, them rebelling everywhere. Everywhere, insurrection is the order of the day. There's a lot of people crying out for change nowadays. Nobody blame it on the black working class, Mr. Racist. Blame it on the ruling class. Blame it on your capitalist boss. We pay the cost, we suffer the loss. And we're not going to get new cross, not a rust. We're not going to get new cross.
Linton Kwesi Johnson, the originator of dub poetry, backed by the Dennis Bovell Dub Band with What About the Working Class? It's from his acclaimed 1983 album, Making History. Born in Chapelton, Jamaica, Kwesi Johnson moved to London, where he still lives, in 1963. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And there's reason, in various little pockets of our universe, to rejoice today. Temper your rejoicing, because as you know, things can revert back to their original state really fast in the Trump administration. But we did have yesterday some remarkable developments in midterm elections. But first, just to bring you up to speed, a federal judge said yesterday that the separated families must be reunited within 30 days. In other words, he says, look, enough of this hand-wringing, and nobody knows who's responsible. Nobody knows what is happening. Nobody knows the exact number of children. We're putting an end to all of that. He has directed that within 30 days, this whole thing must be solved. But even before the 30-day deadline, there are provisions in his order for things to go faster than that. If children are under 5 years of age, they must be reunited with their families within 14 days, and the rest within the 30-day deadline. This is important in the sense that it is an indication, not just a ruling is important. The implication is important for a couple of reasons. One, the federal judge, his name is Dana Sabrow, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, from San Diego, made that ruling. Here's a judge appointed by President Bush, George W. Bush. And he's taking a measure against another Republican president. And it says, therefore, that within the ranks, I mean, this is how you read it. It's an indication that within the ranks of the Republican hierarchy, there's great discontent and disappointment and anger with about what our current president is doing. And somewhere, that's the only way I could read it, somewhere it was discussed that something had to be done. You see, they read Donald Trump's intentions very accurately here. His intentions were clear: to keep this immigrant pot boiling so that he would have a long time with it to make great political hay out of it. And nobody could do anything because nobody knows who's in charge. Things keep changing every single day. And orders are being masqueraded as if, well, you know, handed down from Mount Olympus. So we can't do anything about it. But most importantly, we see the underlying implication here that what the judge is addressing, without saying a word, he's addressing the fact that he's taking away from Donald Trump a go-to subject where Donald Trump will be able, if as long as this continues, will be able to make hay out of it, come back to it ever so often and talk about, you know, the security of the United States being threatened by the, you know, willy-nilly actions of the border patrols not being able to vet everybody. So the country is simply taking its time to make sure that those who enter, even if illegally, but they're not going to be drug dealers, you know, the long list of adjectives he uses to describe people coming from the southern border. So we have a judge putting an end to that. And the way I read it is, not only is he trying to get this thing resolved, but more importantly, he intends that within 30 days, Donald Trump will not have this as a political toy. He's going to have to find something else. This is how it works, you see. They don't say exactly why they're doing things. You just have to read between the lines and see what is going on. This judge, obviously, is sophisticated enough to know that people are going to be watching this very closely, and may Trump and others may even, you know, oppose it. But at least what we should be grateful for is that somebody has stepped into the madness, the logistical madness that we have now, but beyond that, took preemptive action and is denying Trump the ability to have this as a long-term canard. That's the way they do it. Very, very sophisticated, very smooth, but we'll see what comes of the judge's action. He has declared that this must be done nationwide. All children not yet reunited with their families must be reunited within 30 days. If they're younger than 5 years, they must be reunited with their families within 14 days. Okay, so a guy steps into the breach and he has issued a ruling. And you know this is going to bring violent reaction from Trump. He is not going to stand for anybody messing up his plans. And you know, this is one of the aspects of the immigration problem that people are not seeing. How, under the color of law, things could be done that actually favor their political intentions. There was no intention from the very beginning, once the ball got rolling in this direction. First of all, Trump wanted this to be done much earlier than it actually occurred. But there was no intention, once it occurred, to let go of this valuable piece of political propaganda. This was going to probably help him all the way to re-election, and he probably had intended to keep these folks pent up in these temporary tents or whatever it is that they're constructing for them. He had no intention of letting this go. But it is instructive that nobody knows what's going on. Typical of Donald Trump. He's a legend in his own mind. He's thinking of things nobody knows what exactly is happening and why. Even his closest associates don't know. But we should be grateful that Judge Sebrow has taken definitive action and set a deadline that within 30 days, this should be over with. You'll see. I want to talk about some other things, but I don't want to just overload on it. I want us to take our time through these developments because they're very, very important. And the next topic is a stunning defeat that occurred yesterday. Stunning defeat. A young whippersnapper, 28-year-old Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, just absolutely blew away a 10-term congressman in New York City. And he wasn't an ordinary congressman. He was in line, actually, for the leadership, the actual sole leadership of the Democratic Party. Here's what's really interesting. She ran as a Democratic socialist and didn't cover that up and didn't hedge about it, didn't apologize, didn't excuse, didn't explain. She ran as a Democratic socialist against, you couldn't get more entrenched than her opponent, Joe Crowley. He was the epitome of an establishment candidate, backed fully by Nancy Pelosi and others in the Democratic establishment, and she trounced him. Now, people are still wringing their hands wondering how that happened. How did it happen? A 28-year-old woman, young woman, is able to do this. And you're going to tell me and others today how that happened. And what is the significance of that victory in good old Bronx and Queens, where this fight occurred? And the whole nation now is watching to figure out how this happened. What is the significance of that political win? So I'm overjoyed. I am overjoyed for all kinds of reasons, but I'm not going to share them just now. I want you to decipher that victory. Again, 28. He's in his 60s. He's been in Congress since chickens had teeth. He's been there for a long, long time and was considered unbeatable. And certainly, if he was beatable, the expectation was that another establishment Democrat would have taken him out. But here comes a new generation person, 28. This is her first time running for office, and she clobbers him. She clobbers him. And now people are trying to figure out what happened. So perhaps you can tell us. We can take this break and come back for your analysis at 888-874-4888 right after this.
Blame it on your capitalist boss. We pay the cost. We suffer the loss. And we're not going to get new cross. Not a rust. We're not going to get new cross.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about the greatest victory in recent times. And that is a race in New York City for Congress, a total neophyte, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, goes up against the entrenched Joe Crowley and lets him have it. They still don't know what happened. So, Patricia from New York. Hi, how are you? Haven't heard from you in a while.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family. It has been a while. I am so sorry about that.
We've missed you.
Oh, well, I think it's so nice to be loved. Not everybody can say that. So I thank you for that. But I want you to know that I went to bed smiling last night because not only was Crowley the heir apparent to Nancy Pelosi because he was number four in line, but here in New York, he is lauded as the kingmaker of the local Democratic Party here in New York. And his campaign, I think they had gone at $3 million, and Ms. Ocasio-Cortez had $300,000, and he was so convinced that he was going to win, he didn't really campaign because everybody felt that he was a shoo-in. In other words, he did what Democrats always do, took his constituents for granted. I don't have to show up. I don't have to do anything. I just have to be. And lo and behold, when the night was over, he was out of a job. I think it is wonderful.
Isn't it wonderful?
It's wonderful. People are waking up. You know, the gig is up. The Democratic Party gig, it's beginning to crack. And they can sit around and figure out what happened. But what they need to say, what they need to figure out, which is what I called in Sharpton on Sunday, and I said to Reverend Sharpton about the Democratic Party gig. I said, you know, I almost compared them to pimps. You give a pimp everything and they give you nothing in return. And of course, his response to me was that I have to be strategic in my assessment and that I must choose the better of two evils. And then I got a click. And then I got a click. You know how that, you know the drill. I got a click. But the Democratic Party really is gig. I'm hearing more and more and more people calling to say that they've had it, they've fed up, and they're just not going to take it anymore. So this is the beginning of the crack.
What did you hear about Ms. Ocasio-Cortez before the election?
Not a blessed thing. It was not a blessed thing. It was as if she didn't exist. As a matter of fact, he only debated her one time. And that was the end of it. We never heard anything more about her. And so last night was just incredible. It was wonderful.
And you went to sleep smiling.
And then I went to sleep.
I was just so happy myself. I wish her the very best of everything. But I say too, and I want to ask you about that. This race, for the reasons that you just outlined, you know, here's the old establishment guy. It's a done deal. There's no reason to even get excited about it. We know how it's going to turn out. And it's going to turn out that he'll just get his 11th term. And out of left field comes this young woman. And it's not just her, but it is a constituency that all the while was there. It had to have been there to support her in her victory. How is it that we didn't hear anything about this growing, you know, opposition to Crowley?
I don't know. You know, people, the pundits in New York are saying this morning that they don't expect much of her because, of course, Crowley was so powerful. She is a neophyte. Don't expect anything from her. This is a loss for the Democratic Party because Crowley was up and coming in the Democratic leadership. But clearly, as you state, the constituency was there, whether they were a sleeping giant. Clearly, that has been demonstrated. Other than that, I have no explanation. But I can tell you that nobody knew about her before last night. But clearly her community knew about her.
They know about her now. They certainly do.
Clearly her community knew about her, and they came out for her. That's what's important. Her community chose from within themselves, and they supported her, which is what black folks still will not do, will not identify people from within the community who have already demonstrated that they are willing to take the task on and support them.
In fact, that was the hashtag that went with her effort. It was called One of Us. Hashtag One of Us. Thanks, Patricia, for getting us started.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm glad that you're glad.
I am ecstatic.
Chris from West Palm Beach, you're on the air. How do we explain this?
Hi, Utrice. Hello to everybody. Well, I was going to say, even though she wasn't covered by the traditional forms of media, online she had a huge presence and a large following with a lot of people paying attention to it, such as myself. I used to live in that district. Obviously, I live in Florida now. But, you know, clearly I had, you know, heard of her and had been watching her over the past several months. And to me, Crowley did the same thing Hillary did in her race. Oh, I'm the name. I have all the connections and the hookups. Just, you know, support me and, you know, I'll take care of everything. She showed that the people aren't really with that program anymore. So I'm glad she won on one hand. On the other, when I see that the Democratic Party decided to spend so much money against her, I'm a little wary that she'll be able to be effective. We do just need to take this across the country, though, in terms of other candidates like this.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is, in terms of the political landscape, how is it that this constituency that backed her, nobody saw it?
I think people on the ground know it exists. They know it's there. It's just that it's one of those things that, again, when we get our information from the traditional sources, they don't want to talk about this constituency. They would much rather talk about the conservative constituency, because they get to paint them in such a light that it makes Democrats like a Crowley or a Clinton seem like they're decent people, because it's like, oh, look at those conservatives. They're crazy. And, you know, we're not like them. So I think it's always been there. It's just, one, there's haven't been many candidates who have been willing. And I think that has to do with the generational thing and the use of that word socialist. You know, for a certain age demographic, they hear that word and they have different images. To a younger constituency, we hear that word and we hear something vastly different. So I think more people just have to be willing to stand up and say that's who they are, as opposed to trying to play this game a la Crowley or a Clinton or, you know, Cory Booker, et cetera.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thanks so much, Chris, for your call today. Ali from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, you, Trish. How are you doing?
Okay. How are you doing?
Well, I will have to tell you that I had never heard of the girl before until I got a message, a text message yesterday. And then last night, I put the TV, and I couldn't believe it. Never heard of the girl before. And I will have to tell you what I never heard, because I had to stay away from politics altogether. So, but I will have to say this about my observation here in the city. You see, when Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party held those people back in Brooklyn for no voting, about 120,000 people against Bernie, this has put a big dent in the Democratic Party, especially for young people. Young people are giving me hope right now. And I'm saying that because I don't know if you're aware that there is an occupation. It was in front of the detention center here on Varick Street. They moved to the side now. They are on one of the side streets. And when I went there on Sunday, one thing that I noticed was all young people. As a matter of fact, then I got a phone, a two-text message on Monday to please come over, because the person that they were there, two of my friends, they felt like out of place, because one lady told me, I feel like most people, I'm 35 years and older than them in here. So my observation in a lot of marches that you know that I go to a lot of protests, it has been for the last 2 years, all these old young people coming out on the street. And the people that they're protesting right now in this detention center, the majority, 90%, are young people. People they were disappointed by Obama, and they were disappointed for what happened to them here in New York, that over 120,000 people could not vote. And a lot of those people, a lot of the people that couldn't vote here, they were young people. And they're very disappointed with this Democratic Party. I have a lot of hope in these young people coming up. I went to see Finkelstein the other day at NYU, and that room was full of young people, especially Jewish people supporting people in Palestine. It's a lot of hope out there. That has
so you're saying that you're attributing her victory in large measure to a constituency that has emerged that is younger, and they're using different ways of communicating and building that community, despite the fact that people didn't see it coming?
This socially democrat, these young people that I see marching with that red banner and black, the young people, those young people probably went door to door to work for her. And it's not the first time, because it happened in Brooklyn with another gentleman who got 35% running against a woman in for the city council. I went to a school, and he got 35% of the vote. And again, it's the same group going out on the street, going out door to door. Those young people, they have a lot of energy. And remember, one thing that she emphasized was about the Democrat machine is spending 10 to 1 to what she spent. Also, she talked about her message is a good message right now. We don't need all that money to win, and she proved it last night. And a lot of people that are going to come out is young people. I'm not saying that a lot of people in her area, they're not my age or older or younger, but I know a lot of the energy that went into her fighting to win. I'm pretty sure it was all these young people that you see carrying that banner every time that is a big protest, you see them. And it's a lot of energy. I mean, let's just face it. It's a lot of energy that these young people have. And I'm pretty sure they went out on the street, and that's how it was done.
Personally, I know you're an activist. You've been, you always would tell us what is the latest source of the fighting that you are up to. What do you think this means? Are we making too big a deal of it, or is it something that is very noteworthy?
This is tremendous. I mean, you hear the news today, and it's like the whole country is in a state of shock with what happened. But you know what, Utrecht? My hope is that she could to keep that seat, because young people have to go to our government, to our federal government, because I'm sick and tired to see Pelosi and to see Schumer. Sick and tired of this. I mean, too many old people in power. I'm not saying that these young people going to be the savior for all of us, but we need young blood. Let's just face it, young people have energy. And even though they could make mistakes, all of us make mistakes. And that what we're going through right now, we need hope. We need a lot of hope. I don't know if I answer your question, but I'm always out there. For the last 2 years, that have been my observation. A lot of people are upset of what is happening. Listen, a lot of these kids, they're going to college, and they're coming out with $100,000 in debt. You know, and this is what she's talking about. She's talking about free education in all level. And this is what people wanted to hear. Even if you didn't go to school, you still want that for your child. So
I see.
I hope that she could really beat whoever is run against her. And the Democratic machine, they should wake up, because you know what? They gave us Hillary Clinton. And again, I've been accused that we have Trump, because people like me, but I don't care. I'm happy that Trump is out there for the simple reason that black, white, brown, all of us are in the same path, and he's making life miserable for us, and he will make life miserable. But all of us, we are in the same path right now. It was only brown and black, but now all of us are in there.
Thank you so much, Ali, for your call today. Thank you. Gwen, what are you thinking about this race and the outcome of it?
I think I think it's amazing. I think it's a miracle. I know exactly how that girl felt. I worked in the Bernie campaign too, and I went on the streets of Camden, New Jersey. I'm talking inner city Camden. This is what I think the Democratic Party, the so-called machine, does not get, is that when they stole that election in New York City, and it was 350,000 votes altogether, when they did that, those kids did not forget, and the people, including myself, and there was a lot of people that worked in the campaign. It wasn't just kids. But I tell you, I saw it for myself, the enormous amount of people. I mean, I've never seen anything like what I saw in the South Bronx. I had to get in line into 22 blocks of people to get into the rally in the Bronx to see him. Then in Atlantic City, it was this huge rally, too. And every time, there's this fantastic feeling of hope. Even my husband and I remember, you know, the one night we're standing there, it was almost like we felt like we were at Woodstock or something. It was so exciting. And then to have it tanked by this corrupt Democratic Party, and these skanks are still here. And I think she got the perfect storm, because I'm going to tell you something. All this week, we saw all these old losers on TV. We saw Viverito. They pulled her out of the box and they put her up there. And we saw a lot of, you know, the same old crap that these criminals, a lot of them, were up there doing what they do. And these kids are just falling by the wayside. So here comes this girl with all this power of legs with the young people with her. And you know what? She happens to be Puerto Rican, and we can see what's going on around us. And I think a lot of older people feel they voted for her because I think it's almost like an endearment, like give her a chance, you know, and maybe they're underestimating her, that she's going to be very effective. But I think that it was like a perfect storm. I also saw her, and she's very attractive too. And I hate to say it, whether it's fair or not, it does play a part in these things. So she's very attractive, very well spoken, and they did what everybody in the Bernie campaign did. We hit the bricks in the Bernie campaign, and I'm not going to say that doesn't have a huge reason, a huge piece of why this young woman got in. So I think what's encouraging is you're going to see a lot more candidates that are going to be coming through the door that were spawned through the Bernie campaign, because it was small local organizing. And people got used to working out. I mean, you know, my husband and I were in every single project. We printed our own literature. We gave it to everybody in the projects. I mean, it was a lot of footwork. And if you're really doing what you're supposed to do, and I've never run against somebody who actually is doing what they're supposed to do on the other side, they don't hit the bricks. They don't go door to door. And I will tell you something else. The guy that I ran against would not do any more debates. We went on TV. I kicked his butt in the debate, and he wouldn't debate anymore. And I thought that was outrageous. What a disservice to people that the candidates, I don't think any candidate should be allowed not to debate. Every candidate should have to do it mandatorily, because how else are people going to know what your point of view is? How else are they going to know whether when you get in there, you can actually stand up and do battle with the people you may have to do battle with? So I think it's very, very exciting. I think that that these people on the left kind of did what the people on the right did when they put Trump in.
How is it that it seems as if she came out of nowhere?
But she didn't.
And, you know, how is it that we didn't get consistent coverage of this?
Are you kidding me? Are you really kidding me?
Like, race.
Okay. I can't believe you're asking me this, because you, of all people, know that 1,000%.
How is it you have a spectacular outcome, which is now news everywhere? How is it that in the lead up to the race, the actual election, we didn't see very much coverage?
Because I didn't
hear anything about this.
Okay, the purpose of our press is basically propaganda, and to keep the people in place that feed their bones. Okay, and I'm telling you something, that they purposely didn't put her in there. Because they wrote her off, and they certainly didn't want to give her any publicity. They make it as hard. It is People tell you to run for office all the time. It's so unbelievably hard because they can't even give you a fair shake in the press. And you know what? I remember for myself how many times I was demeaned in the press when I was running just because I didn't have a lot of money. Well, you know what? I think somebody who comes to the table with not a lot of money is a lot cleaner than and somebody. As a matter of fact, a red flag goes up for me. The minute I hear they raised $1 million, I got a red flag coming up because where did the $1 million come from? So this girl went out on foot. There was also a low turnout. So you also can't dismiss that. There's a low turnout. There's this thing going on with these children from Mexico. The area has changed where she is. I think it's definitely more black and brown than it is white. But more than anything else, I don't think she could have ever done this had she not worked in the Bernie campaign and made those big connections, because she had what it takes. But she met other people to get in line with her, and they all kind of got trained through the Bernie campaign of how you do a grassroots campaign. Plus, she's an organizer herself, so she learned a lot the first time. But I would not underestimate this girl. But I definitely want you to know and underline this: the media blacks all newcomers out, and also the campaign finance board makes it near impossible, because the very money that's supposed to be going to the people that don't have any money, the woman I went up against had millions of dollars, maybe not that much, but she simply said to the campaign finance, Melissa Mark Viverito, listen, I perceive there's a threat out there against me. It was another candidate from the Bronx, and I need more money. So they gave her $80,000. No questions asked. That's completely illegal, by the way. Underline that, too. It's completely illegal. And this is what happens. These people are selected to be run as candidates. They are connected with other people, and they are there to do the gentrifying for these fat cats at the top. That is exactly why Melissa Mark Viverito was brought into East Harlem. You need somebody to speak Spanish really nicely so she can tell you adios when she kicks your ass out of the community. And that's exactly what she did. We have huge amounts of just like Central Harlem and West Harlem, okay? But you need somebody like that. You need, excuse the expression, you need one of these whores to sell themselves out to the money at top in order for the greasy machine to keep going. So this girl, I believe, is coming to the table with clean hands, and I believe she's got an army. Watch out. She's got an army of Bernie supporters with her, and they're taking the reins of government on themselves. So they learned a lot they were out there.
So I said thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
And sharing.
Thank
Mary from New York, you're on the air. How do you explain
happened Teresa,
last night?
And greetings to all everybody at PRN. My take on all of this is very interesting. I thank Donald Trump for all of this, because he's been giving us Democrats and progressives a lot of fodder for us to feed on, and we throw it away. We've been paying attention to what we haven't been paying attention to. And perhaps if this immigration issue hadn't, you know, been so close to the election, maybe we wouldn't have been paying attention. He woke up Hispanics. We Hispanics have been asleep for a long time. We don't realize the numbers that we have and the energy that we could be using. And here this comes this girl in the Hispanic community. I heard a lot about her in the Bronx, in the barrio.
Everybody's calling her this girl. She's 28 years old.
But everybody else was dismissing her. They didn't give her the time of day. They didn't give her the publicity. But they forgot that the grassroots were paying attention this time. And maybe, I mean, I hope this energy continues, the Hispanics will wake up and realize that they can outnumber all of these fools. They can throw the Democratic Party in a tailspin just like they did now. And they don't. And maybe she woke us up and she says we can do it if we really want to, because we've been asleep at the wheel for a long time. I blame us. I don't blame everybody else. I think we have been asleep at the wheel, and we've taken this democracy and whatever we have for granted, and now these fools have made us wake up. It's unfortunate that Trump was the one who did it, but he certainly did it. And if we don't wake up and see what he's doing to us, he's doing it to all of us. It's not just one group. He just pits us against each other. And he's doing it to the whole country, but he's starting with what he thinks is the weakest link. And this girl woke everybody up, especially the establishment here in New York.
Going forward, what do you think the reception would be when she takes her oath of office and takes her seat in Congress?
Well, I think they're going to have to stand back, especially the establishment. They're going to have to tread very lightly because they already tried to do it to Bernie Sanders. And look at how that backfired. So somebody in the party is going to say, well, wait a minute, we better tread a little bit lightly, but it's up to us to keep on pushing.
Bernie Sanders did not do. She,
right.
From the very beginning, she declared who she was. I'm a Democratic socialist. Bernie still won't say whether he's fish or fowl.
Yeah, yeah. But maybe she learned from that. Maybe she realized. I think it was a learning process. He did it. Remember how everybody was attacking him because he was a socialist, and then he said, yeah, I'm a socialist. She probably learned from a lot of his mistakes. And I think we can look back and say, he should have done. Maybe that's what she learned from. And she realized, if I don't take the chance now, when is it going to happen? We can't wait another 20 or 30 years. You know, by that time, all of us will be gone. Mm-hmm. You know, because he'll stop all of us from ever getting it. And he has actually, and I'm talking about Trump, Trump has given us the impetus to wake up. How long can you be, how long will you stay beaten before you react and stop talking about Russia and stop talking about all this other nonsense? There's enough, we have enough to complain about, and it's closer to home. It's our people who are being put down. So, you know, he's trying to divide all of us. This girl has woken everybody up and say, don't sleep on your laurels. And I'm not surprised, and yet I am surprised. I mean, Hillary took everybody for granted, and she thought she had an automatic in with all of us. Well, guess what? She didn't see who she was campaigning for. She didn't campaign where she should have campaigned. She shouldn't speak to the issues. The only time that she spoke to anything was because she was pushed by the things that Bernie Sanders was saying. That's the only thing that pushed her. But now this girl has learned from everybody else's mistake and said, our time is now, and we're going to seize the opportunity. And it's very nice to see this generation maybe taking the mantle from us. I mean, we've slept at the wheel. We started a revolution 30, 40 years ago, and then we fell asleep. We became comfortable. And now Mr. Trump comes in, and he woke us all up. So I think this is the illogical end result of what he's been doing. But I think they're going to have to they will probably tread a little lightly. They're going to try to co-opt her into the party to try to see if they could get her in line. And hopefully, you know, we'll be behind her to make sure that that doesn't happen. But I'm sure they're going to try to resist her as much as possible because it's not in their best interest.
Hmm. Well, thank you. Thanks so much for your call, Mary, today.
Okay. Thank you.
Mohammed from Queens, you're on the air. What are your thoughts? How did this strike you, this political race and the outcome?
Okay. First of all, I'm going to say I sincerely wish that your health continue to improve.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yes, and greetings to all the audience. I'm going to try to be brief to give other people chances. Last week, I met the young lady. She was on the streets in Jackson Heights, and she had a few people around her. But let me just say this about her, and I'm going to try to be brief with my little commentary. Her people are from Puerto Rico, and I'm sure they're from El Campo. So you could see her enthusiasm, you could see her sincerity, and you could see her innocence, you know. And Jackson Heights is where a lot of people are unemployed. It's a large Latino community. And in the morning, you find guys on the street waiting for them trucks to pick them up to work. So people attracted to her because of her sincerity. It's not that no one knew her. She was out there. She was out there on those regular streets, 37th Avenue in front of the post office. I saw her last week, and I talked to the guy that was with her. He said, you know, something about her just, you know, I saw her honesty remind me of Obama. And I said, well, you know who that guy really is. But anyway, her honesty, her sincerity, and her innocence, and she dressed like an ordinary person, and you can see it in her eyes. You can see her honesty. I'm a psychotherapist, so that's the first thing we look at is people's appearance and behavior. And most of those eyes tell a story. So right now, and I hope she stayed this way, she's innocent, she's sincere, and she has a lot of enthusiasm. And I get a sense that she's honest in her endeavors, you know. Thank you very much for having me.
But before you go, I'm interested in your take on how it is that you have a full campaign going on and so many people didn't know.
The people that wasn't in the street didn't know. We know because we saw her out here on the street. See, the TV didn't give her the coverage, right? So she went out into the neighborhoods. She was right on 37th Avenue. That's a block over from Roosevelt Avenue and right by the post office. And that's where your common everyday people are. And like I said, she has that that sense of sincerity, honesty, and innocence with her. And young people, I know they don't mind to keep calling her girl. That is a young lady. You don't refer to Mr. Trump as boy. You don't refer to them. So she's a young lady. She's 28 years of age, attractive, handsome, innocent, enthusiastic young person. And you, if you was around her, you can feel her sincerity. And that's what did it, not the TV and the radio.
What do you think the Democratic Party is thinking today?
We got to find a way to get her out of there. She'll tear us apart. Yeah,
do you think it is reflecting on what she did to win and what the party did that caused it to lose?
Yeah, we are in changing times, see, and what's happening now, these young people, this is a new generation. I'm going to give you an example, like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he told young people that they were black because they felt a sense of shame. That was for that time. Now you look at the kids, like I work with them in the schools and in the clinics, and I said, what color are you? They said, black. I said, look at your skin. What color is it? And they said, brown. And I said, well, why do you say black? And that's because they were falling. They just need to wake up. You need to wake them up, help them develop their character and their leadership skills, and they're going to change this world, you trees. They're going to change it. The young people, when I tell them, you keep calling those people white, they're not white, they're pink. They're ashamed of the color. The old people don't pay me no mind. They said, Sharif, we don't want to hear that S. The young people say, you know, that's right. I never thought about it. And I say, your greatest asset is your ability to think. That's where your treasury is. That's where your wealth is. It's in your thinking. And I give the example, focus, concentrate, analyze, probe, explore. You know, you got many, many definitions for think. That's our greatest asset. And that imagination, just imagine what they will make this world out of. We get rid of the people that's perpetuating the European dominance.
So today, are you hopeful? Are you wary? Are you concerned? Are you happy? What is your mood today?
I'm a little upset and angry with the establishment, but I know that the young people are going to change this, Utrecht. These people are on their way out. And the young people coming along, they're not going to accept this. And they're going to wonder why we took it for so long without challenging these people, you know, those who are in positions of leadership. They're going to change it, Utrecht. They have the insight, and they'll listen to you, and they recognize truth. The elderly people, they don't want to hear it because a European person in power didn't tell them. See, if you or I tell them, you know, they don't pay it no mind. But if a European person who has some authority or in a position of authority or power leadership, they listen to them, but not a brown person. If you don't have a whole lot of money, and that's the problem. They're followers, you know. Only 10%, 15% of the people are awake to what's really going on in the country today. You are, you know, just like the banking system, you know, that's the Rothschilds, you know, and how they took that, you know. It's out there, the Ashkenazis, the Khazars. These people tell you, and it's one of them that always tell a story on what's going on, you know. But they're broke now, Lutris, because they printed too many dollars. And there's nothing to really back it up. And this guy in Washington that's breaking all these relationships and these treaties what he's going to do is turn the people against America, because he's going to cost him more money. And what they're going to do, they're going to abandon that dollar. And when enough people do that, the BRICS, it's nothing backing this dollars up. So the people are getting their gold. They're going to start doing their financial transactions in their own currency and with gold. And that's what's going to pull this dollar all the way down, you know.
Well, thank you very much, Mohammed, for calling and for contributing so meaningfully to our discussion today. Thank you. That brings an end to the program today. I can tell from the enthusiasm, because we still have quite a few people who would want to come in, but we'll get to catch up with them. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crow, and I thank you again for your input and your enthusiasm and for contributing so meaningfully to the program today. Bye-bye.
When crisis is the order of the day, when so much people crying out for change no idea. So what about the working class?